I would like to introduce our speaker for today, who will speak until 10:10, and then we'll answer any questions from the audience. Let's all welcome CT.
Good morning, everybody. I'm CT. I'm an alcoholic. I have a little bit of that cold that's kind of going around, so I have a lozenge in my mouth, so excuse me, and I'll do my best to make what I say a little bit legible or audible. I'd like to thank you for saving my life. You know, the people that came before me in Alcoholics Anonymous are the ones that guide me on the path, and the people who come behind me are the ones that keep me going and pushing me on the path, because it's, as we already heard this morning, it's so easy to fall off this path. Our natural tendency is to go drink, and for me, to drink is, like it says in the book, is to die. But before I, you know, get the opportunity to die, I get to live in a really uncomfortable place. And I'm really familiar with that uncomfortable place. I lived there for a very long time, all the way up until my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'd really like to thank you for having me come here this morning and be here with you. I like that I got the opportunity to hear some people talk before me. I really... You know, last night I was like, God, I don't want to go hear myself talk. But I'm really grateful that I get to tell you a little bit about what happened for me and what it's like now. And again, thank you for my life. It's paramount that I be involved in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. But it's because for me, to live in, you know, by myself is a real dangerous place. But that's my favorite place to be, in my car, eating a burrito. Like, that's like heaven for me. And so I have a lot of issues around a lot of different things about isolation and about doing whatever I can to not feel, get out of right here, right now. And Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the ability to live presently today, in the moment. And that's like one of the key tools that I have to use over and over. Is like, there's a guy, Earl Hightower, that talks about his sponsor used to clap his hands, and he'd say, get in there, and he's like, what, get in there, and he goes, get in between those claps, and that's the right here, right now. Some people say, look at your feet, where are you right now, and I have to use that tool a lot, because I go to the future a lot, and I get very overwhelmed with how am I going to get through the next day, or the next week, or freaking how am I going to get on a plane to go at Christmas, and I just need to do today, November 11th, right here, right now, at 10 minutes to 10, quarter to 10, and I can do that. I can do the moment. And you've taught me that here. I took my first drink that meant anything to me in high school. And it was I was very in need of a drink by then. I grew up in a family that was a very Christian family. We sat down at dinner every night. We went to church. We did poolside Bible studies at our house. We did all this stuff. I was very involved in like an organization. But during school, during all those fellowship things, in my family dinners, all of those things, I just did not feel like I was a part of. I didn't feel like I've always felt I was the bad kid. I just didn't fit in. So it was paramount when I took that first drink in high school that it do something for me, and I didn't know that. And what happened was I went up to Mary Anderson's house. I lived in Fullerton. Went up to her house, and her parents had a big liquor cabinet. Back then, I don't know if they do it now. I don't really hang out with people who drink, so I don't really know, but they had, like, in our house, too, like, every kind of alcohol, and drinking socially was a very big thing in my family. They had big parties and that sort of thing, and I think Mary's house was that way, too, because this liquor cabinet looked very familiar, and we got a mayonnaise jar, remember, and we filled all different kinds of booze in it, like creme de menthe, whiskey, and, you know, Grand Marnier, and all that stuff. And in this jar, because you know you don't want your parents to know that you've drank any booze, but I always wanted to hang out with the cool people, and by the time I got to school, people knew that I had this mayonnaise jar full of this whatever it was, and there was a bunch of us girls, and we went in the women's locker room, or the girls' locker room, and like we all sunk down in the showers, and we took the lid off that thing, and it smelled like shit. Oh my God, it smelled so terrible. I took that first drink, and man, it did that thing. That sense of ease and comfort came immediately for me. No one got caught. No one went to jail. No one got in trouble. It was amazing. And I spent the next many, many years trying to go after that amazing. At the end of my drinking, I can tell you, without going into a big drug log, because you all have them and you don't really need to know mine, there was no amazing. Everybody went to jail. Everybody got hurt. There was nothing that was similar to the shower. It was totally living on the streets, going to jail, trying to get the next bottle of booze, trying to get the next drug, trying to get the next stolen bicycle, trying to get whatever, steal a car, whatever it was, to get me out of right here, right now. And just a couple of things. I had abandoned my 10-year-old daughter because I didn't think I had anything to offer. Horribly painful thing. I still struggle with that, too. She came to him. I just took my birth. Oh, my birthday is October 4th, 1993. And Whitney came to my meeting last Monday because I've been so busy. I hadn't taken a trip or hadn't celebrated my birthday until last Monday. You can talk to your sponsor about that one. I've talked to mine. She first time I told her that I wasn't going to be able to take a birthday meeting until after the month of October, she was like, CT! And I was like, yeah, I deserve that. Yell at me, that's okay. Or she didn't yell at me. Lori's never, ever yelled at me. But anyway, Whitney came to this meeting with me, and, you know, I got to say in the face of a meeting, you know, thank you, Whitney, and for never giving up on me. And I don't know that she didn't give up on me when she was 10 and pissed because her mom left. But since Alcoholics Anonymous has came into our lives, she has never given up on me, and I'm really grateful for that. The other thing was my father had died in 1993, and I could not go to the hospital and be there with him while he was sick because I had to drink. There was no way for me to go into St. Jude Hospital and do what I do and be there for my dad. Terribly painful. And no job, you know, unemployed, lost everything, house, car. On a good day, I had a stolen bicycle, really, seriously. And I've been in a very serious car accident in 1989 where I smashed into the center divider on the freeway because I fell asleep. And I have some scars on my face from that and on my legs from that. And I was charged with the DUI, but then they dropped those charges because there wasn't enough alcohol. I had been doing drugs, too. And that was my go card. There's no problems here. I look like Frankenstein, but there's no problems here. I don't have a problem with drinking. So if those kinds of things make sense to you, that you could not make decisions based on what alcohol was doing to you to better your life, then you probably belong here, because I definitely know that I belong here. So I was sentenced to go to a program called New Directions for Women. By the way, I'd been sentenced several times to different programs. None of them were 12-step programs. Odd. I don't know what that was all about. I even got sentenced to a men's program because the courts didn't know anything about what we were doing here. I think they're better educated now. But at New Directions for Women, it was a Wednesday or Thursday when I showed up. I think it was a Thursday, and there was just one other girl at the program. It's in Costa Mesa. And I was looking at an 8-year prison sentence or going to New Directions for Women. And that when my attorney passed the flyer through the bars in jail at me, he said, would you like to go here? And they were all at the beach walking around. I was like, yes, I'd love to go there. And, you know, as I'm under the bench with my roll of toilet paper freezing in the cell down in, you know, main jail. So my mom dropped me off because my mom never, ever gave up hope on me. And since there was only one other girl there, we weren't going to have family night. So they took us to an old-timer meeting. And so on the way there in the La La bus, the lady said, just when you get to this meeting, it's a closed meeting, so tell them you're alcoholic and tell them your name. And I'm like, I'm not alcoholic. And she goes, tell them anyway. And she probably very sweetly said, well, this is why we tell them, because you're in a closed meeting and you may identify, la, la, la. But what I heard was, tell them anyway. And I remember I put my hands up and I was like, okay. And I thought, at that moment, I came to the turning point, and I thought, I'm going to do this thing, whatever it is, because I had no idea what AA was. I thought we were going to church, because we actually did go to a church. And I said, okay, I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to do it. I'm going to follow all the directions, because I was just, like, so sick and tired of being done. And, you know, trying to do it my way, as we all are. And so identified, they had me read a portion of chapter 3, and it was in one of these little plastic things. There was a podium, and, you know, I was like, taking a trip, not taking a trip. Like, totally had no idea you'd ever heard any of these words before. I thought I had to be all, and I had these messed up glasses from jail that were crooked. They may have even been missing an arm. I don't know. You know, it was just that ridiculousness. And nobody, like, said, well, actually, they clapped for me when I was done. Made me feel really, really good. And then I slept through the whole meeting. And then And then nobody like did the thing like in church, you know, like up or anything. They just left me alone. I think they probably knew I was dangerous, not to them, but to myself. And I had really short cut off hair. Like, you know, you go by a mirror with a pair of scissors doing what I was doing and you got all your hair's cut off. Like, so I had this crazy haircut. And at the end, they just hugged me and they said, please come back. Sometimes that chokes me up and sometimes it doesn't, but right now it's really important to just come back. And and I didn't know you told everyone that. I thought you really wanted me to come back. Really, I was so out of the, I was so clueless. And I said, okay, I'll come back. I'm in rehab. I didn't know they were going to take my ass to a meeting, you know, every day we get in the bus and we go to a meeting. And you know, they'd say any newcomers, and I'd raise my hand, and everybody go, yay! And it just, like, was miraculous for me. I mean, I hadn't been hugged in so long, I hadn't been touched in so long. I mean, I was living on the streets. It was just like I was out of the loop. And all of a sudden, in one meeting, I was in the loop. I was, like, in the middle. You guys, like, put me in the middle. I don't know how you did it. And I will be forever, ever grateful for that. My family will be forever grateful for that. I don't know how that happens. Without the hand of God, that's not possible. And since I've been here, I haven't had a drink or a drug. Haven't stolen a car or a bicycle. Wanted to steal lingerie. I don't know why. So sometimes I remember being in the mall and like, this doesn't have one of those security tags. I could take this. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to get out of here. Like dropping everything. Like I now, when I go into the, you know, the clothing dress room, whatever, the changing room, dressing room, whatever, I like hang my clothes back up that I don't want. I, you know, I'm neat and tidy. I'm courteous. I put my grocery cart back, you know, that kind of stuff that you guys all taught me here. Man, I just left all my shit in that dressing room and just got the heck out. And that has happened more than once, probably more than 20 times. I am addicted to getting away with stuff. Totally addicted to it. I'm getting away with whatever I can. I get away with the lie in my head. I try and get away with so many behaviors. Because I'm not drinking today, they're really behaviors. It's not like I'm trying to get away with a drink because I don't pick up a drink. But I just am so addicted still to that. So for me, it's, I have to be a student of the steps so that I can live, like someone shared, you know, have a solution to the spiritual malady, have a solution to the physical malady, have a solution to the mental malady that I have, and that's alcoholism. That sense of ease and comfort only comes when I work the steps and when I come to meetings. I don't know what it is, or when I work with another. I don't know what it is. And I used to go to a lot of meetings. I go to 4 meetings a week now. I could use more than 4 meetings a week. But when I first got sober, I used to go to probably about 3 meetings a day. Well, I didn't have any big plans, so. But I lived over, I got discharged from New Directions for Women. And actually my sponsor, Lori, she wasn't my sponsor at that time. I think it was probably about 60 days when I asked Lori to sponsor me. But she had seen me from my first day coming in to New Directions for Women. And I remember about 30 days, she said, we were in one of those little group meetings. And she said, I'm not sure Lori remembers this, but I can remember where I was sitting, where she was sitting. I don't know who was around me. But I can remember the look in her face and the words in her voice said, CT, I really think you're getting this thing. And, I just needed those little things throughout early recovery where people would say, oh, they'd come up and they'd say, oh, I loved your share. Or, oh, God, I really got that. Or they'd come up afterwards and say, well, you know, welcome to the program. Or, you know, I got what you were saying. So how did you deal with that problem? Or, you know, like it's the fellowship around coming to the meetings that have helped me. And the only reason that I'm able to, like, talk about those kinds of things is because I'm really in the book a lot and I really like working the steps. Did that just come out of my mouth? I really like working the steps. I really do. I believe that working the steps has been the solution for me. And there are times when I used to go to a meeting with a guy who had a ton of time and he would say, CT, if you work the steps on everything in your life, your things will get better. And he said, and I couldn't understand what he meant, everything. And he said, he sat me down and he said, with a piece of paper about this big, and he goes, this is how I write out step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is in 6 and 7. This is my 8 simplet. This is my columns. This is everything. And now you got to go to God, and then you got to give it to someone else. And I was like, oh, okay. And it took me a lot of practice learning how to do that. And I can sit down and write the steps out on a little piece of paper as well. And that has helped me like immensely. And I'm not a big journaler, a big writer. I do some gratitude lists in the morning, a little bit of writing, that sort of thing. But when I am in trouble, I know that that's my solution, is to get pen to paper, so that I can get out of my head the craziness and the irrationality that happens, the trying to get away with things that goes on in my head. I can get it on paper and I can find some solution. So in step one, I really think I took step one when I was going back to jail the last time the marshal showed up at my mom's house, and, you know, I'm naked and tweaking on a pair of glasses and the shower's running, you know, that whole like stupid stuff that goes on. I don't even know how I got to my mom's house. And I, right before I go to jail, I'm always like, oh. And then that big wall comes up like, you ain't getting in. And in that like 10-second period, the marshal came up on my back and up on my shoulder, which they usually, if they were on my shoulder, it wasn't a nice thing. But he just gently put his hand on my shoulder and he said, everything's going to be okay. And I had this big weight come off of me. I mean, I really felt it. So I think I took step one then, when I realized I was powerless over this alcoholism. I didn't know there was a solution, but I knew my life was unmanageable. And so in step two, when I come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity, I came in with this Christian God, and I thought that was going to work. But then the more I came to meetings, the stuff happened that if how I believed in God and how I trusted God and how my relationship with God was the only thing that was going to work the way that it was before, I wouldn't need Alcoholics Anonymous. So I had to rethink my idea of God. And so one of the tools that Lori asked me to do, she said, I want you to go around and ask people about their God. So I'd write stuff down because I can't remember a damn thing. Like, I had this all planned out this morning, kind of, and I have no idea what I planned out. So I have to write stuff down because I can't remember it. So I got an idea of what you guys do for God. And I was like, oh, I could implement that. Oh, I could do that in my life. Oh, not that. Yeah, that's a good idea. Oh, I'm glad you believe that, but that's great for you, but not for me. And that's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that there's really no one way to do it. So step three, if I've already described this God in step two, which I wrote out a want, at about 6 years, I wrote out a want ad for God, and I put it on green paper, and it was like, God, wanted. And I started writing the things I wanted in a God, that he's powerful and loving and my biggest cheerleader and likes music. At that point, he didn't like country music, but now he's okay with country music. likes, gives flowers, knows Whitney, that's my daughter. You know, just whatever I wanted. And I added to that, God was like, God's gone wild. God, you know, there was just a ton of things that I was able to list on that. And so once I've done step two, then it's easier to do step three and turn my will over that. I love the third step prayer. The meetings I go to, I'll use the third step prayer. I think it's a really powerful piece for me. In step four, I wrote all this stuff down in 4 columns. And I tried every pamphlet. I tried all this stuff. What ended up working for me was kind of the Joe and Charlie columns, because it was all written out and it kind of made sense in this crazy head for me. I love the Joe and Charlie format, actually, because they give, you know, what's their opinion, their experience. It's not the right way or the wrong way. It's just what has worked for them. And they have this sense of love and tolerance that says, come and join us on the path, basically. And this is what worked for us. And that's really worked for me. So I wrote all these columns down and went over to Lori's, and I was nervous as could be, and, you know, shared all, I don't know how the hell she stayed awake for all of it. And then when she was done, she go, okay, let's go eat. And I was like, that's it? And it wasn't until I was ready to do my first 5th step with someone else, and I called Lori, oh my God, she's coming over. And she goes, yeah, okay, she's coming over. And I, well, what are you doing? And she goes, well, I called my sponsor when you were coming over. And I said, what'd she tell you to do? And she said, just pray to listen. So, I mean, how easy is that? And so she reminded me that I did a really thorough 5th step. And so it was at that moment that I realized that I was really in this deal. It was when I was giving it to someone else. You know, working the steps on my own is very important. But for me, what's locked everything in is sharing it with someone else. The craziness that I have inside of me only gets set free by sharing it with someone else. And I think that's the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous for me, is that for me to offer this to somebody else is the reason that is the reason that I get to stay here, is that I'm willing to do this for someone else. So there's step five. Also, I go to this Monday night meeting in Balboa now, and the first night I went to that meeting, there was a guy who shared about columns, but it wasn't the four-step columns. The columns were, this is your business, this is God's business, and this is none of your effing business. And that has really helped me an awful lot, too. When I think of columns, sometimes I think of the four-column inventory, and sometimes I think of those three columns that really, really help me. Is this really my business, or is this God's business, or is this just none of my business, stay away from it? And oftentimes, it's none of my business. And that's, you know, I got enough stuff going on. I don't need to be in your business. I don't come into Alcoholics Anonymous to work the steps so that I can tell you what job to take and what vacation to take and how you should deal with your mom and what you should do with your boyfriend. I come in here to share with you what my experience is with the steps. And that's my job, is to carry that to someone else. In step 6 and 7, I think Lori puts me on 6 and 7, or has put me on 6 and 7 more than any of them. That was always the very toughest in the beginning, and continued as we've worked the steps. Again, has been the one that's always been the hardest for the two steps that have been the hardest for me, is become willing to have God remove the, you know, whatever craziness is going on, and then actually letting God take my character defects. In step 8, it was really pretty easy to do step 8. I have worked the steps with girls where sometimes we destroy their fourth step. But I didn't, and I'm glad that I didn't, because I get to go back and look at it. But anyway, if I was to take my four columns, what the person was, what the thing was, what happened, because that's where I live in the problem, and then what it affects, and I get rid of all that, and I just look at my part, I really can see what the problem is, and I can get set free. Then I can go to 6 and 7, and I can say, these are the character defects I have. I'm snotty. I'm controlling. Pretty much, if I look at the problem in that fourth column, the situation, or I mean the character defect that I've assigned to that, in the beginning it was just the ones that were in the book, like I was dishonest, self-seeking, frightened. But then I kind of drilled down that. Over the years of doing them more and more, I've been able to drill them down more, too. Often I'm pretty snotty. Often I'm pretty controlling. Often I'm pretty fearful. When I use those words, then I can really find the opposite of that and work on my problems. So anyway, in step 8, when I had that list of all the people, then in step 9 I got to go to Lori and say, this is the list of people that I have, and how am I going to do these amends? And there were some that she said, yeah, if you can't find that person, then you need to pray for them or put some extra money in the basket for them, or that sort of thing. There were things where she said, oh no, you won't be going and visiting that person. And then there were things where I had to write a letter. I had to write a letter to my dad. There were things where I had to actually go and do financial amends. I had to go to the recovery house where I got loaded. There were certain things that I had to do, employers, that kind of thing. So step by, it took me 12 years to get through my first eight-step amends. In step 10, 11, and 12, those are all bring me back to God. But for me, God does not come down and just go, in the fog, in the mirror, this is what you're going to do today. God comes down and talks to me through you. So for me, 10, 11, 12 is about me being grateful, about being humble, about being of service to others, about letting somebody get in the grocery line ahead of me because they need to, about not having road rage. I've done the road rage thing and got chased before. I don't have road rage anymore. One of the things that I do with the girls that I sponsor is I ask them to call me and tell me what they're feeling, because I think that's why we drink, is over our feelings. What they're grateful for, because that swings us into the solution. What they're doing for someone else, because I think that's really critical that we be aware of the things that we can do for other people. I think if I'm searching for God, I'll find God. If I'm searching for things to do for other people, I'll find the things to do for other people. And then I want to know what they're doing for their program. What step are they working on? Whatever it is that you are working on in your program, that's really critical for me. And what happens is when they call and leave a message, or we're talking about those things, then I can apply that in my life. So I heard in a meeting a long time ago, if you don't read the big book, you're at the mercy of the meetings that you go to. And you may get the wrong message in some of the meetings. So it's really critical for me to be in the book. It's really critical for the girls that I sponsor to be in the book. I'm not like a big book thumper, but there's certain phrases in the big book that just like take me there. One of those is a relationship, it revolves around a relationship with God, and that is I think it's on page 21 or something. I don't know. I can't remember anything. Appeared to be the flimsy reed turned out to be the loving and powerful hand of God. That's exactly what it was like for me. And there are many times in my recovery where I feel like I'm hanging onto a flimsy reed. And if I just hang on a little bit longer, I then begin to see that it's the powerful, loving hand of God. I'm really grateful for that. Whitney, my daughter, and I have a really good relationship today. I have a relationship with my mom today. I'm a really good aunt. I'm a good sister. I am employable. I have a job. I've been there at this particular job for almost 7 years. Next year, I even get a sabbatical. So I'm going to take an extra little trip and go to Europe. And, you know, I don't even know how that happens. I just don't know how that happens. This year, in June, of the beginning of June, I've been painting in a class for the last 16, 17 years. And my teacher decided that she wanted to retire, and so I took over that business. And so I'm a business owner as of this year. So it's like working two jobs. I'm exhausted. But I'm really, really grateful. Who knew that this little girl who used to ride on a stolen bicycle, living on the streets, who abandoned her entire family, would be employed, live in a house that has a really comfortable bed, heat, is current with my family, has friends and relationships, is a business owner. I didn't know I was going to get all that here. And I'm really grateful. I'd really like to thank the people who came and showed up today, this morning. Lori, Sonia, Amelia, and Mark are here. They're people that I've known for a very, very long time. And I love deeply. And in the preface to the third edition of the Big Book, it says, the very last line says, each day, somewhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic shares with another his experience, strength, and hope. It's really powerful. And I'd like to thank you for letting me share mine today.